Welcome to the Healthy Skin Show with Jennifer Fugo, where we're flipping everything you've been told about your chronic skin issues upside down and connecting you with alternative solutions your dermatologist never told you about.
Welcome back to episode number 210 of the Healthy Skin Show. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about the impact of using topical steroid creams on the face and how that could specifically impact your eyes. This topic actually hits quite close to home because for those of you who don't know, my father was a very accomplished and well-known ophthalmologist and eye surgeon. And I had worked for him in his office with patients for about 10 or so years. And I got to see firsthand some things that now in this field that I work in do concern me. And I get a lot of questions about the potential downsides to steroids, and especially topical steroids when they're used on the face. And I would have loved to have brought my father on to talk all about the issues and concerns that he had, except he passed away in March of 2020. And I had been searching for another ophthalmologist to come on the show to share this information with you. It took us a while, but we finally found the right person. And ironically enough, this particular doctor I'm going to introduce you to today knew of my dad's work. So it was a really great conversation before we even dove into today's interview. My guest today is Dr. Brian Boxer Wallacher. He's known as America's TV eye doctor, and he's been featured on Good Morning America, The Today Show, CNN, Dr. Phil's, The Doctors, and many more. He also has over 1.6 million followers on TikTok and is known as the go-to doctor for calling out various fads about what is real and what's fake. And so he has tons of experience because he does actually still work and see patients in the ophthalmic field. And I am so appreciative to have him here with us today. So without further ado, let's dive in. Thank you so much, Dr. Boxer Wallacher, for being here. I really appreciate it.
I'm excited to be here.
I know, and especially because we found out, for everybody listening, we were talking before this interview, and I discovered that Dr. Boxer Wallacher actually knew my dad, and he knew of his work, and so it was just a very small world. Who knew? My last name was the was a clue.
Yeah, when you said your dad was an ophthalmologist and eye surgeon, and I was like, Fugo? Oh my gosh, he invented the Fugo blade. He's well known in the field. Yeah, he's famous.
So it's a real honor to be here with you today, especially because, like, I would have normally have asked my dad to do this. So it's nice that I'm getting to interview someone who actually knew of my dad and his work on this topic, which is really near and dear to my listeners' hearts, or shall I say eyes, so to speak, because the reality is that many of the people who I'm talking to on my podcast, they're listening because they're dealing with skin rashes of some sort. And I'm sure in your... And actually, I might ask you some other questions just on steroid drops and things, but we're going to talk about steroid creams predominantly and the use of them on your face, especially around the eye area. And so, as an ophthalmologist, if someone comes to you and they very apparently have, like, swelling or some sort of rash in the orbital area, obviously a steroid cream can help, but... are there some guidelines that you tend to give patients to be careful about usage of a topical steroid in that area?
Applying the steroids to the skin can have huge benefits, especially short term. And if I have a patient who comes in and has been on a cream for a long time, one of the things we're always going to do, we would do this anyway, but I'd be wanting to pay particular attention to see what the results are, is to see what the pressure in the eye is. Because steroids, in a small percentage, but not an insignificant percentage, can increase the pressure in the eye. And if that was undetected and went on for a long time, it actually could cause glaucoma. And another risk of steroids long-term is developing cataracts as well. And then there's a rare risk of steroids, which could cause a droopy eyelid or ptosis, as we call it. It's like spelled like the pterodactyl, like PT, ptosis. they just forgot the P, and we're just going to just go with the T for ptosis.
Ptosis. So, okay, so let's back up a bit, because we got three things to unpack here. So thinning of the skin is one, and that's actually a separate issue that you didn't even mention. So, but this area around the eye, is that skin thinner than other areas, say on the face or the body?
It is. It's one of the thinnest skin areas in the body. I'm going to venture to say it's the thinnest.
Let somebody
out there in the PhD community come back and say, no, actually, you know, there's this one area right here. But let's just say it's the thinnest skin in the body.
Okay. So if we're also, because it's thin skin, so that could that also contribute to like premature aging around the eyes and whatnot? If you're using like steroid long term to deal with rashes in the orbital area?
Well, by thinning the skin, then it does increase the risk, and I'm just going to close my eyes just to demonstrate, is there's blood vessels there and veins, for example, and one sign of aging is when people have more of a veiny look. So if when people are blinking or closing their eyes, if there's more of those blue veins showing, then that's going to make people appear older than they are, which is not usually a desirable look.
No. And then you said, and I didn't even think of that, the intraocular pressure. So for everybody who doesn't know, you have like basically fluid inside of your eye, and you have these different chambers. You have the posterior and the anterior, so like sort of like front and back. And you need for that pressure to be, what do you consider to be a healthy eye pressure? I mean, I know that that varies from person to person, but generally speaking, what would a normal healthy eye pressure range be?
Between 10 and 21 is considered your general, quote unquote, normal range. I mean, there's exceptions if people are walking around a little bit higher, but they are passing all the glaucoma screening tests, and that's probably okay, of course, based on what their eye doctor says. But generally, that's the case.
So if you're going to prescribe this medication, or say if you're just going, somebody's just going to their family doctor and getting this med, and it's not to say like maybe using it for a week might not be a problem, but if there's an ongoing use of it, like in your opinion, do you believe that someone should go to an ophthalmologist or an eye doctor of some sort and make sure to get the pressure in their eyes checked?
That would be my recommendation, because if somebody's on a steroid cream or lotion for months, then a small percentage can get this response where the pressure starts going up in the eyes. And the thing about that is it's not painful. Nobody would feel that pressure go up usually. So the only way it's going to be detected is by the eye doctor checking it.
And I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask. So is there anything wrong with the pressure going up? Like if it just goes up and stays there for a while, like is there damage that can be done, or is it something that it's not that big of a deal? And if you're on it for 2 years and then come off, you're probably fine.
You can never make that assumption. I mean, no patient using a steroid long term should make that assumption, because there is a real risk of causing glaucoma. And basically think of the eye as fluid filled like a balloon. And if you overinflate that balloon with water, it puts more pressure on it. And that pressure can cause damage to the really key nerve called the optic nerve that connects the brain to the eye. And if that pressure is causing nerve damage, that can start to affect the vision, the peripheral vision. And that's that's how glaucoma manifests, as loss initially, at least, of the peripheral vision. And so left unchecked, the vision keeps closing in and closing in. And really, if it was high pressure for a long time, it can cause complete blindness if untreated.
So this is something that's kind of a big deal, I would say.
Yeah,
you don't want to be using a topical steroid around the eye area and not having that checked. And then you said, too, about the issue with, I guess, essentially like a premature cataract. So you could end up developing cataracts early. For those who do not know, what is a cataract and what does that mean, essentially, for your vision?
So a cataract is where the natural lens on the inside of the eye, which is typically clear, starts to develop an opacity or a cloudiness. And that can cause vision to decline, or even before that, just increase glare and halos at night and make driving at night a little bit challenging.
And so can you naturally get rid of a cataract?
There's really no natural treatments that have been proven to reverse or get rid of a cataract. Eventually, if it's a significant enough cataract, and obviously as an ophthalmologist, I do cataract surgery, that means we remove the natural lens and we put a lens implant in its place. And so if somebody had that develop after using steroids for a while, and I've had patients who've come in with blurry vision and I start asking about their history and looking at their medication list, and I've seen this happen, and people are just so surprised that a steroid caused their cataract.
I mean, there's so many risks too on being on steroids for long term. Does the same apply to steroid eye drops? Because I know that there were some instances where my dad would say, oh, well, you're using like a steroid type medication for your eyes themselves. Is there the same risk?
Absolutely, because if anything, it's probably more easily absorbed directly on the eye. So yeah, steroid eye drops long term have that same risk. If anything, probably a little bit of an increased risk over topical steroid creams on the skin.
Is there anything that you recommend, like if someone's really struggling with rashes around the eye area, and maybe even to like chronic blepharitis or some sort of issue where the eye is really red and irritated? In addition, I mean, I've seen photos of folks who have like really inflamed red eyelids, and their eyes also look really scratchy and uncomfortable, and they just cannot seem to get rid of this. Are there any other potential options that they could use other than steroids?
I think you bringing up blepharitis is a great, great point, because any inflammation of the eyelid glands, that's what blepharitis is, that can cause a lot of pain and irritation and dry eye symptoms and red eyes. Steroids can help knock it down, but it's a Band-Aid treatment. So what we know is that the most common type of blepharitis, dry eye, is inflamed oil glands. They're called meibomian glands. And research out of Harvard Medical School over many years has found that these glands have receptors for this hormone, testosterone. And so what we've developed over the last probably 15, 17 years is using a cream that has some testosterone in it. And it sounds a little bit crazy, but this works in about 95% of people so well that they just continue with this cream, because if they stop, they're like, oh my gosh, my eyes are starting to feel like they're back in the toilet again, basically. So they use the cream just on the skin right here at the edges, and it absorbs and gets into the glands. And like I said, for a huge percentage of people, have worked wonders when blepharitis is usually a chronic, lifelong condition. And I even have it myself. Like, I'm also sort of a patient, and I use this testosterone cream myself on my own eyelids. I've been doing this for, you know, probably, you know, 14, 15 years now. And, you know, it's kept it totally in check. And I don't even, like, have dry eye or feel my eyes at all because of it. So. So that's really addressing the root cause of blepharitis, where steroids can help maybe break that vicious cycle, but shouldn't be used.
And what about someone who has, say, like really inflamed, a lot of redness in the conjunctivitis? The conjunctiva is the white part of your eye. It should be, I guess, a whiter-ish tone. So for somebody who's really struggling, because I do also have clients that really struggle with histamines. And so they're very sensitive to histamines in their diet. And their eyes just get really, really red almost from exposure to histamine. They're very, like, they even may have a lot of allergies, really sensitive to environmental issues. Is there anything like that you have found that's helpful in terms of, you know, if someone goes to their ophthalmologist, what they could possibly ask for? Is there any type of help there to help calm the eye the eyeball itself down?
I think that's a good point, and I think it's important to distinguish allergy or histamine-related red eyes from sun-damage red eyes, because very different mechanisms. And just to, you know, that I just want to make a public service announcement that it's really important for everybody to wear sunglasses outside, especially on cloudy days, because the ultraviolet light from the sun causes damage to the conjunctiva, like you were talking about, the membrane over the white of the eye. That can make it permanently bloodshot or have yellow spots develop, and people with darker complexion get brown spots on that white area. We treat it with the procedure called the wider eyes procedure, so that's treatable, but the point is it's different than the redness from allergies. But please wear sunglasses, everybody. It's like sunscreen for your eyes. So when you're talking about help now for allergic-related red eyes, so there's over-the-counter drops like Patanol, which can help. Those are antihistamine-type drops and can stabilize. And then for some short-term allergic relief, there's Nafcon A. That's a good one. And you have to be a little careful using some of those drops that are also the vasoconstrictors that make the eyes look white temporarily, because it can cause a rebound redness that can be permanent over time. They almost trick the eye into thinking that it doesn't have enough blood flow. And then the blood flow is created by the eye in reaction to that. And then people can end up with permanently bloodshot eyes.
That does not sound fun at all.
I've seen it. That's why I know it exists, because people are coming also for that wider eyes procedure that have unfortunately been unknowingly victimizing themselves with the chronic, you know,
get the red out
drops.
So can I ask another question? Because you've mentioned this a few times, like drops can be readily absorbed through the tissue, that the creams can be absorbed through the tissue. So here's the thing. I get asked a lot, my eyelids, my eye area is really bothering me. And, you know, can I use this cream? Can I put this moisturizer, this product around this area? And, you know, look, I'm not a doctor. You need to speak with your doctor. But my experience had been in working with my dad that people had used all sorts of things around their eyes and then ended up like in a lot of pain. So for somebody who is struggling with this, because I don't want to be like, don't do all these things, right? Because that sort of feels like, well, what can I do? But as an ophthalmologist, you have another little PSA maybe you could share with people about why you have to be careful what you actually put around the eye area.
I think it ranges not just from creams, but even when people are getting lashes applied, and the glue in the lashes could have formaldehyde, and that can be extremely irritating to the skin. And if the glue, for example, even got in the eye, it could actually cause a potentially corneal ulcer. So I think look for things that are low allergy profiles. That's probably the best way to think about it, and more natural. So even for people who have like dryness of the skin around the eyes or dry eyes, we've had amazing results having people just take oral flax oil capsules, because it internally lubricates the membrane. And so that's been huge as a natural thing. But in terms of the creams, like look for things that have less of the chemicals and just more natural, because those chemicals can be very irritating.
So even if it's a cream, like an eczema cream for your body, right? Does that necessarily mean because it's an eczema cream, it's safe to put like literally around the skin of the eyeball itself?
You'd have to look and see how it's labeled. And if you have any concerns, talk to a doctor about that. Because like we talked about, the skin around the eye is very thin, so it's more sensitive, it's more susceptible. By the way, there's one other thing I think is good to mention. We talked a lot about the steroids, but in rare cases, like people using steroids, especially steroid creams, it can cause the eyelid Oh, no, we talked about the ptosis.
Oh, yes. Why would it cause the eyelid to droop? That's right. Thank you for circling back on that. Do you know what the reason is that it would cause the ptosis?
The presumed reason is that it's affecting the muscle, because as we're looking at each other right now, we have eyelid muscles that are holding our eyes up. Not our eyes, our eyelids up, technically. But if those muscles get weakened, guess what happens? Right? The eye droops.
Yeah, the eyelid.
Now,
yeah.
People will interpret it usually as my eye got smaller, which, of course, didn't happen. But the eyelid drooping makes it appear smaller. So steroids, in rare cases, can cause what's called a myopathy, which is just a really fancy way of saying it's messing with the muscle, and it's not as strong, and it's weakening the muscle. And so the muscles here droop. And so that's a rare risk. People taking systemic steroids can get a systemic myopathy or muscle weakening in their body too, like higher
really?
Dose systemic steroids like prednisone and things like that. But that's important to be aware of. If you're using an eyelid steroid and you're getting a droopy eyelid, you should definitely talk to your doctor.
Oh, wow. I didn't, you know, I knew some of this from my dad, and some of it I didn't know. And that it's really helpful to hear this, because I don't know where else to, like, I was like, I got to ask somebody, because I don't know where else this information is being shared. You're the first ophthalmologist I've had on the show. I've had a lot of dermatologists. I've had some gastroenterologists. And, you know, I've had dietitians and all that, but you're the first ophthalmologist I've had on the show. And this is really helpful for people to hear, because your eyes, the one thing that I took from all the years of just having a dad as an ophthalmologist was that while we've made so many advancements, we can't replace the eyes, like the eyeball itself. We can't. So if there is damage, sometimes it's not fixable. We're not there yet. There's no bionic eye. There's, you know, like if the retina is damaged, sometimes that is what it is. And so he always impressed upon me, the eyeballs are essentially an extension of your brain, and you want to take care of them. And so we want to do our best. This has just been like so cool and enlightening. I really appreciate you spending the time sharing this with us, especially too, because you have, for those who don't realize, Dr. Boxer Walker actually has a really great TikTok. If any of you are on TikTok, he has a really great TikTok account. And actually, I've watched your account, and I was like, what is that? And then you told me that the eye surgery didn't go over so well on TikTok, which is not honestly surprising. I'm desensitized to eyeball surgery because my dad made me watch it as a child. But most people, eyes are a funny thing, you know?
It's funny because on TikTok, my main role is to help answer questions. And in Gen Z's language, something that's fake or not true is called cap. So I have this whole game where I hold up like my blue hat, you know, and put like my blue cap on in response to a video if it's like not true. And so mostly it's been dispelling a lot of myths or confirming things that are true that could be really surprising, natural remedies for things, which I've learned a lot doing this. But when I was doing eye surgery one day, you know, people were asking me, oh, I want to see a LASIK. I want to see a LASIK, because I do TikTok live too and answer questions that
you
way.
You don't want to see a LASIK. Let me just...
And, yeah, so like you're desensitized, of course. I'm desensitized because I do LASIK. And so I thought, because people were asking, so we were showing a live LASIK, and people just get so wigged out when they see an eyeball and instruments going in an eyeball that they never associate the two going together. And so after that, we're like, no, we're not going to show any live surgery, and we're not going to post any like surgery videos on my account. That doesn't go over well to the general population.
No, I think eyes are like teeth. Most people, those two areas, like, don't want to. No,
I'm going to venture to say eyes are like sausage. And I know you're wondering, how is that? It's like you like the sausage, but you don't want to know how it's made in the factory.
No, you don't. No, you don't. You don't want to know how the surgery's done and everything. I mean, I saw a lot of interesting things that my dad would do over the years. But I will say having that direct, just getting to see firsthand the damage that can happen. And actually, I've even had like corneal abrasions, which are extremely painful. Even just that, like, I can't imagine what a corneal ulcer must feel like. Obviously, some of these things we do want to take seriously and make sure that we're reaching out to an ophthalmologist. Like, I think a lot of times too, people get confused. If you wouldn't mind, I think this would be a great question, maybe very simplistic, but why would someone reach out to, or when is the right time to reach out to an ophthalmologist versus an optometrist? Because they're not the same thing. And I think people get confused and think eye doctors are all the same, but they're really not.
That's a great question. So an ophthalmologist is somebody who went through medical school, is a medical doctor, and then they specialized in eye care and eye surgery. An optometrist is also an eye doctor, but they went through optometry school. So they're really specialists in optical care, i.e. glasses, contact lenses, but also medical care for eye conditions too. Some of them can be very well trained with specialty training to treat other types of eye conditions, but they also treat regular eye conditions as well. So one's a bit more specialized, but both are eye doctors and provide really good eye care, depending on what the needs are.
Yes. And obviously, if it gets too serious for an optometrist, they're going to refer you to an ophthalmologist, or you might even get referred to like some sort of subspecialty, depending on what issue. Like, I knew there was neuro-ophthalmology and there's all these different specialties. So
yeah, like my specialty is cornea.
Okay.
So most of my world is like in the front part of the eye, like the windshield of the eye, basically. And that's one of my specialties is keratoconus, where the cornea bulges out. And I developed and pioneered a number of procedures like cross-linking to help stabilize it from bulging and other procedures to restore the vision, improve the vision.
That's awesome.
So we can get really specialized in one area.
And it's very it's like micro. All the surgery is very tiny.
My world is about a half a centimeter.
Yes, it's very tiny. But I just want to thank you so much for being here, Dr. Boxer-Walker. This has been so informative, so helpful for my listeners. I know that they will really appreciate it. And we'll make sure to link up to all of your social media accounts and your website and everything in the show notes so they'll be able to find you. And I just thank you so much for being here. It's been an honor to talk to you.
Well, it's been a lot of fun as well, Jennifer.
It's my hope that this episode will not freak you out. You won't have a panic attack, but it will help inform your decision and also allow you to have more meaningful conversations with your doctors, especially when it comes to using any type of steroid, because yes, it can impact your eyes in different ways. If you've got questions or comments, or you want to check out any of the resources we have linked up, including Dr. Boxer-Walker's website, you can head on over to skinterrupt.com/210, and you can leave your questions and comments there so we can keep the conversation going. This is a great episode to share with people who you know who are using topical steroids. And I would encourage you to share this episode within Facebook groups and online messaging boards, and even hit the forward button if you can, and share this with people, because a lot of people can end up having premature cataracts and other issues and just really didn't know that this is a potential factor. Again, it's not to scare you, it's to inform you and empower you and to help you ask better questions. And I think as a community, when we share information like this, we help lift each other up and give each other more options, better conversations, and allow for better advocacy at each and every turn. And before you head off your day, head on over to your podcast platform of choice, rate and review The Healthy Skin Show. Share why you love this show and then hit the subscribe button. That way you never miss a weekly dose of inspiration, hope, client stories, tips, research, and strategies to help you rebuild healthy skin. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you in the next episode.